the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast, and this is the second installment for, 2019, and it's still raining. Here we are. What's today, Jason?
The 10th of May.
The 10th of May, and we basically are about as wet as we are on the 10th of February.
Yeah, the weatherman on the Greenville television station last night said that we got more rain between midnight and 10 o'clock on May the 9th than we average for the month of May.
If you look at my reports and my field view reports that I get, it says we got 5.7 inches. I don't know what the rain gauge at my house had because it went underwater. It's one of those, you know, you stick in the backyard and the backwater come up above it.
I saw several, you know, things on Twitter and stuff that people's rain gauge overflowed.
So, I mean, I don't know where we're at. There was a tweet someone put up the other day that basically said we're about to float off, and I think we're about to float off.
Well, it's surprising, you know, the people that, you know, older than us, you know, our parents' age that do agriculture and say they've never seen anything like this. I mean, even 1973, which was catastrophic from all accounts, you know, this one is different but extreme too. So, you know, we're in the middle of a historical event, what it feels like.
I think so, actually. But we also got two quiet individuals in the room with us, Dr. Tom Allen and Dr. Jeff Gore. And we felt like with
which you could see from Jeff, not so much from Tom. I mean, we've been on for one and a half minutes, and Tom hadn't said a word yet.
Actually, 2 minutes, 1 second.
Yeah. Tom, are you there? Tom, can you hear us?
I'm here. I was gonna shoot for 4 minutes, see if I could make it. It's not going to happen.
He's still tired from spin class this morning.
That's right. I'm tired, worn out.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for my turn.
Oh, come on, man. Just jump right on
Jeff,
in there.
Jeff, the dutiful foot soldier.
If y'all guys out there listening, we're trying to keep good spirits up, but we're the same as y'all. You drive around Stoneville, and I know every bit of rice that I've planted is going to have to be replanted, and we planted soybeans that washed up out of the ground, and Tom's got the worst-looking cornfield I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Tom's corn went completely underwater for several hours.
Like
lake underwater, not just like up on the rows, invisible underwater.
Well, it's probably going to come out of something for him because V5 corn goes completely underwater. Tom, what's that disease that's probably going to get in there?
You'll get crazy type downy mildew before you even get to V5. We've had that in the past on this experiment station, in fact, in two fields that went underwater.
Speaking of that, you know, we talked about that several weeks ago after we got a big rain. You know, when we had some corn up, that was probably going to show up. I wonder why we hadn't seen any yet.
Strangely enough, it's different in corn than it is in grain sorghum. You know, grain sorghum, in the years we looked at it, whatever year that was, 3, 4, 5 years ago.
The last year we planted grain sorghum. Yeah,
that's right. The last year we had a lot of grain sorghum. Uh-huh. You see that earlier in grain sorghum than you do in corn. You don't start picking it up in corn until you start throwing an ear or a tassel on and everything starts looking strange.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that was some pretty big corn that we saw it in. I mean, it had been around for a while, but when we were standing in the field, that was pretty big corn that we looked at up there around Metcalf. That was
waist-high corn.
Yeah, and that was the same year.
Yeah. So that's a potential issue, and I guess the theme of today we're going to talk about is, with all this rain, how are we going to move forward if we actually get a crop in the ground and get it up? You know, I know there was a lot of questions the other day. We looked at some seedling disease on rice. Tom and I looked at some last week. You know, specifically talking about the seed treatments, guys, when to Jeff and to Tom, what if I planted in, say, the first week of April and that rice is coming up struggling right now, where am I at with the efficacy of those treatments?
Well, I mean, talking about rice, you know, that's something that we looked at a few years ago. We had a graduate student, Andrew Adams. He's Dr. Andrew Adams now. He graduated several years ago with his PhD. But he, in rice, looked at the efficacy of seed treatments when we flushed fields once or twice, compared to where we didn't flush. And that's not really rainfall like we're experiencing now, but I think it's a very similar situation. And basically what his research showed is that when we have a lot of water going across a rice field, it's going to negatively impact the efficacy of those insecticide seed treatments.
And by negatively impact, can you give me a time figure on that? So, does it last not as long, or what's the negative impact, I guess, is my question.
Well, the thing about insecticide seed treatments in rice that's different than other crops is that we need that seed treatment to still be effective when we put that flood on the field, because that's when the rice water weevils are going to move in and start laying eggs.
The permanent flood you're talking about.
Yeah, the permanent flood.
Not the temporary one we have on right now.
Yeah, that's right. And so what happens, seed treatments are water soluble. That's what makes them work. They get into the water and they're taken up by the plants, and that's how they work to control the insects that they're there to control. And so when you have a lot of water like we have right now, is that seed treatment's getting diluted. It's moving out of the root zone, moving throughout the soil profile, but it's not where it needs to be to work anymore when we get a lot of water.
I guess my question really, though, is if I planted, say, on April the 1st and my rice hadn't moved because we've probably accumulated less than 100 heat units. I'm just making that up, guys. But we've had very little sunshine and very little good growing conditions. So if I planted April 1st, I might not get to flood till June now.
That's right.
Is there anything left?
In most cases, I would say no. And there's differences in the seed treatments. We're mostly in Mississippi using the neonic, so it'd be Cruiser or Nipset. Those two are much more water soluble than the other two options, which would be Dermacor or Fertenza. Those are diamide. So with the neonic, Cruiser and Nipset, they're probably, I wouldn't say completely gone, but in terms of the effect that they're going to have on rice water weevils, they're essentially gone. That efficacy is going to be so low, most likely, that we're not going to see an effect from them.
So then are you down to just a automatic pyrethroid application before they flood?
Well, I wouldn't say automatic. And, those foliar applications can be kind of iffy. Like I said earlier, when we put the permanent flood on, that's when the weevils are going to move in. And so a pyrethroid is going to give about 2 to 3 days residual control. Using a pyrethroid pre-flood can work really well in some situations, but in a lot of situations it won't. It's going to be a little bit too early putting it on pre-flood. The best option, and I know that that's what growers prefer to do because they're going to be putting a herbicide out that can co-apply the insecticide with the herbicide and save that application cost.
Hey, that's a new, not to get off on that, but co-apply is a new one on me.
Well, they can mix it with their herbicide.
That's a thing. I've heard that.
You've heard co-apply?
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was an entomological term because I always think about a tank mix.
Yeah, I got some buddies in Louisiana that use co-apply.
There you go. That's where I got my education. That must be where it came from. But anyway, the best option pre-flood is going to be Belay, which is a neonic also, but it's going to move into that plant, so it's not going to degrade as fast and give a little better residual control. The other option is to wait until that flood's already on the field. Scout, if you start seeing the weevil adults and start seeing scarring, that scarring, the feeding injury from the adults, is a good indication that that insecticide seed treatment is gone. And at that point, make a foliar pyrethroid application.
So 7-10 days, is that too long after the flood?
I would get in within that first week that it's flooded. And it's, I know that's iffy because it takes time to get a whole field completely up to flood.
Well, we're probably going to be making a bunch of salvage grass herbicide applications anyway, so that would be fit right in that same. That's why I said we usually wait until the water gets, I say static, but stabilized, to make those applications. So that right. would be a
yeah. That I mean that would be the perfect timing. Once that flood gets on there, yeah. on the field, that's the time to
on the whole field. Look. So probably about 10 to 14 days after you turn the pump on.
Yeah, yeah.
So what about the soybeans? I mean, we've had some beans that have been out there for a while too.
Well, it's likely the same situation. I mean, those seed treatments are only going to do so much. The more water we have on a field, the more impact it's going to have on those seed treatments.
Tom, are you shaking your head no or yes?
I'm just in disbelief. That's about all I can say.
I'm not as worried about it in soybeans from an insect standpoint. I mean, it is important, but it's not as big of an issue as it is in rice.
Dr. Allen.
Well, and you know, I think everybody always questions it, and I've had, strangely enough, more seed treatment or seed applied fungicide questions this year than any other year that I've been here. And there are a lot of factors that have really gone to some of those conversations. The hardest part about seed applied fungicides, regardless of what crop we're talking about, and this is something I think we don't spend enough time talking about as plant pathologists, those products are all put on those seed to protect the seed and the emerging seedling. Once that comes through the soil profile, you essentially have no product on that part of the plant that's coming out. They're not going to be like your insecticides, whereby they're going to be systemic through the plant itself. Most of those seedling diseases, and I say most because that's kind of a difficult topic to talk about because you're talking about a complex of organisms. The majority of the soil-borne ones are water-loving organisms and tend to like cooler temperatures, which is why we talk more about seedling disease issues in small little parts of fields that hold water. And when the temperature shifts and gets cool at night, you can see more things like Pythium seedling disease and all the rest of that. And that's, Bobby and I looked at some of that last week in some rice. And you would have been splitting hairs if you'd really talked about, well, is it Pythium or is it Rhizoctonia? Because unfortunately, those are probably our two biggest issues, rice, corn, cotton, and soybean.
Well, does it matter if it's Pythium or Rhizoctonia if it's dead?
No. It's dead.
And isn't that compounded from a disease standpoint that those plants are going to be much more susceptible to disease, not only because that seed treatment's being compromised, but, I mean, right now plants are under stress.
Yep, that's exactly right. And stressful situations, you end up encountering most of these problems. And usually the hardest part about being a plant pathologist is when you're called out to look at something, you'll run across plants that have both, either Pythium or Rhizoctonia, and then determining which one of those actually killed the seed or developing seedling is difficult. And at that point, it honestly doesn't matter.
Well, Tom, I'm sitting here looking at the forecast, and you got, you know, highs in the mid-70s and lows in the low 60s and upper 50s for the next 5 days, not to mention saturated. So
from a soil standpoint, I would say we're at field capacity.
Yeah,
I would too.
I mean, you mentioned about being the cool and wet. I mean, it should not. I mean, the high today is 64. We shouldn't have a high of 64 on May the 10th.
No, that's exactly right.
And I know it's cloudy and all that, but still,
I wouldn't say that necessarily captures the term cool. That's mild. At least in the standpoint of most of those seedling disease issues.
It was 87 2 days ago.
That's cool. The Delta.
That's true. Absolutely. And more to Jeff's comment, it's a stressful situation. Add a lot of water, change the temperature a bunch from 87 to the 60s, and that's not necessarily a good thing. Everything's going to struggle.
Right. Yeah, we were in a field the other day, and you know, Bobby picked up a big handful of goo, because that's what it was, and it was, you know, just noticeably cool, you know, the mud, and then went to another field. It was a little different texture, and you know, the temperature was even a little different there. I mean, if you can feel differences in soil temperature, then it's probably pretty cool. Bobby, you know, the only thing we've really made any progress on is corn, and naturally, depending on where you are, yeah, that's relative. But we're talking about how much seed treatment's left. I know you've been talking to folks about how much fertilizer's left. So, You know, we've invested quite a bit in our corn crop in places with that fertilizer bill. So how much of that is remaining out there?
Well, it kind of depends on what source you went out with, where you started. God, I would say just off the bat, if you were using that UAN, probably 40%'s gone. And that's a very, I would say, conservative estimate. Because you think about something like UAN, where 25% of it's already in the nitrate fraction. We've held enough water on most of our soils to pond enough for denitrification to occur. 30 to 40% would be conservative. And on some fields that have been underwater for, you know, 3 to 5 days, you might lose a little more. I had a guy text me the other day. I told him, I said, you know, depending on what you had out there, and depending on how long the water was on, and if it come off relatively quick, how much would you lose? And he asked me, what does relatively quick mean? And I said, a day and a half. Once you start letting that water sit longer than 2 days, your chances of losing nitrogen increase dramatically.
Well, and one thing I've seen just driving into work is but I see a lot of fields that right now 3/4 of the field's underwater. And so it's going to take several days for all that water to get off, and it's going to be a gradient throughout that whole field of how long that water stands on.
We have historically in the Mid-South always pre-planned a tassel nitrogen application. Well, we've got a lot of data to support that, but there's also a lot of data in the Midwest showing late applications for rescue applications to regain yield. And we're going to be looking at that type of application this year in a lot of our corn fields. Rather than 225 bushel corn, probably went out the window a long time ago.
Yeah, that's my concern. You just take, you know, one field, it got planted, didn't come up, lost a stand, whatever, got replanted to corn. So then you've got that investment in there. Now you've got a fertilizer investment and herbicide and whatever else. And now you're looking at some losing a considerable amount of your nitrogen. So you've got an uneven stand. You know, at some point, I don't know, I would have a hard time justifying continuing to really pour inputs into the crop. But I don't know, you know, that line's different for everybody. I don't know where that is.
It's definitely different for everybody. And I had a conversation with a guy the other day. I said, down in the South Delta on the edge of that backwater. And I told him, I said, I think the thing that we need to think about this year is, what do you feel like a realistic yield goal is? Pull out, you know, Larson's planting date data. Pull out what you've got in that crop right now. Because not only is nitrogen gone, I mean, the atrazine's probably gone too. And we've had to replant. I know of some people that have planted corn 3 times. So, I mean, how do you move forward with the budget when maybe the realistic yield potential is 170 bushels?
And that herbicide is a real concern, just like the areas that y'all work in. Because the way we like to manage weeds in corn, we like to make one big herbicide application and then, you know, move the ball on down the field to whatever else we're doing, whether it's planting soybeans or planting cotton or rice. And in this case, when we put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, and then you get these, you know, catastrophic rain events like we've had, yeah, you get a lot of herbicide dissipation. And just like the seed treatments, you don't know how much is dissipated. You just know that there's some dissipated and it's probably enough to compromise your control. And the problem with corn is most of our treatments go out with atrazine, which has a fairly early cutoff, 12-inch corn. And there are some products that you can stretch on later and kill some targeted species. But if those residuals dissipate, it may look fine, you know, through June. But then as that canopy opens back up in the, you know, late summer, fall, as the corn starts drying down, any little small weeds, particularly morning glories that are hanging around under that canopy, well, they go straight to the sunlight. And then everybody that, you know, deals with corn knows that morning glories in a corn canopy in August and September just ruins your day.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And, you know, you're talking about inputs into a corn crop right now. Jeff, I've seen a lot on Twitter where people are having to spray stink bugs in corn, and that's not a normal thing, right? So that's another added input on top of all these inputs we have.
Well, I wouldn't say it's not a normal thing. We always spray some, but it's definitely been a lot more this year.
I think if I hear about them spraying stink bugs, it's higher than usual. But because I mean, I'm like Bobby, it was news to me.
Yeah. I mean, we've got
like we have stink bugs in corn.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, we've gotten a bunch of calls about it this year, and there's definitely a lot more been sprayed this year than in the past.
Well, I should add while Jason's thinking, if I have a minute, crazy top downy mildew situation typically tends to be worse in fields that have previously had corn in them. So it's not a situation whereby you're going to see it in every field if it hasn't previously had corn. At least in the years that I've been here, that's what we've tended to see in the past. And in one of the fields that we had a problem in Stoneville, and that we may or may not have had a minor pH issue in that field. And I think that that adds a bit of stressful contribution to that scenario.
Well, talking about pH issues, Tom, we didn't get a lot of our lime out last year because it was so wet in the fall. You know, not a lot of those fields that had pH issues got addressed, because there's still lime today stacked up on a turn row.
Well, hard part is we're not going to know for several weeks to know what that looks like. And that's one that I suspect we'll be getting a pile of telephone calls here in the next 6 weeks.
I mean, the residual effects of 2018, man, you can see, you know, combine tracks or tillage tracks in corn right now, you know, left over from last year. Even if they worked the field, you know, you can still see it in places. Just unreal how that last few months of 2018 is carrying over. So, guys, I mean, we're all here and we all do what we do. So, in a bad situation like we're in, I guess let's just try to leave folks with, you know, some advice for your own area moving forward. Hopefully the weather will give us a break next week and guys can get rolling again on something. So, Jeff, what do you want to leave folks with?
Well, before we wrap up and I do the thing to leave, Don Cook wanted me to mention that he's had one call this year from somebody that had rice in a bin that has weevils in it now. They didn't treat it going into the bin or whatever. So just keep an eye out for that. He wanted me to mention that Don's starting to do a lot of stored grain work. So y'all check your bins to make sure you don't have an active infestation. If you do, call Don. I'm sure he'll be glad to help you out.
And that's probably good advice, because if you look specifically for rice, we have probably the largest carryover stock, you know, in the Mid-South this year than we've ever had.
Yep, and those insects can be a pretty significant problem in some situations. So as far as wrapping up, I think, you know, from an insect standpoint, the number one advice that we can always give people is just have somebody looking at your crop. As I said earlier, the seed treatments on the stuff that's planted and up now is probably going to be compromised. So scouting and looking for active infestations is probably going to be the number one thing to keep in mind as we get further into the year.
Dr. Allen?
You may have to circle back to me. I can't really think of much of anything. I mean, other than, you know, keep tabs on the Crop Situation blog, follow us on Twitter, and stay abreast of anything that kind of picks up over time, because I suspect moving through this season, things could get fairly interesting simply because we do have a little bit later planted corn crop.
Now, you know, Tom says his year don't start till the end, and that's when he's most needed.
That's true. That's true. Well, my two cents, you know, when it does dry up, you know, everything is going to be happening at warp speed. Hopefully, it's going to be warmer, and so those summer annual weeds are flushing up really quickly right now. So, I guess, you know, coming out of the gate on the acres that haven't been planted or on the unfortunate replants, just don't plant anything that doesn't get treated. You know, even in a rush, I think you'll be money ahead to make sure you get some kind of residual on that field, you know, in proximity to the planting operation, whether it's a little ahead or a little behind.
Well, I would say, you know, we've passed a prevented planting window for corn now, and we're approaching it for rice. And I'm not a proponent, you know, of just prevented planting to prevented planting, but look at what you've got before you start over, because you may be money ahead to do it that way. And just know that every one of us in here, if you don't know already, have a cell phone, and we can get to every corner of the Delta pretty fast, usually within 24 hours. So if y'all got questions in a tough and trying year like this, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and call anybody. We're here for you. And just know that we feel your pain. And if you need anything, give us a shout and we'll be there as quick as we can.
Before we wrap up, I'll say one more thing. And always try to keep in mind that as bad as things are, there's people that have it a lot worse. And I think, you know, the Delta this year is the way we're starting off is there's some folks that are in decent shape, have problems, but there's some, especially the South Delta, that it's just a horrible situation right now. And just keep those folks in your thoughts and prayers, because it's going to be a challenging year this year.
Yeah, because down there, we still, I think when I was talking to Frank Howell yesterday or the day before yesterday, what did he say, Jason? 470-something?
417, I think is what he said.
1,000 acres that are still underwater, and we got rain coming. And if I'm not mistaken, the gates are closed right now.
They are closed, yeah. Yep.
So you're right, Jeff. You know, we might think we have it bad, but those guys a little bit south of us, they've got it truly bad.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're going to jump off. Good luck to you. And like Bobby said, you know, absolutely call us if we can do anything for you.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.